A Lifetime Original Podcast.
You know who I'm talking about, though.
Absolutely not. I never seen it. I don't know.
Oh, Naomi.
I love a Lifetime movie.
That's my best impersonation. One, two.
Okay, you know this is a funeral, not the club.
There's no Disney in Ukraine.
Can the record show I did not touch this child?
This ain't Hollywood. You can afford a hotel in Anaheim.
However, you did say something that it really tickled my ear. Strip Jenga.
If you pull a block successfully, you can be like, take off a sock.
He knows how hard it is to charge someone for sexual assault. He always wins.
He raised you as his protege. You need to start thinking like him.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of I Love a Lifetime Movie. I am one of your hosts, Naomi Ekparagon, here with the woman of my dreams, quite honestly. Yeah, I put it out there, okay? Even though she is married. Miss Megan Gailey. Hello, Megan Gailey.
You're the woman of my dreams, too.
That's so nice of you to say. I do think I'm needier than you would want in a lover.
But the thing is, I'm extremely needy. So maybe, does two needies make a right? I don't know. I don't know. But speaking of being married, I had a very, like, quote unquote, innocent dream last night where I was on a date with the guy that had gray hair on the TV show Catfish.
What?
And this dream was like so elaborate. Like we were at a Sunday place in my hometown. There was merch of another comedian there. And I was like, do you know her? I love her. And he goes, I dated her. We were holding hands. Like it was so much. I told CJ about it this morning and he was like, all right, good luck, honey.
Had you watched Catfish recently?
No.
So this was just like in your mind maze. It was just pulled out. That's insane. I've never seen Catfish. I get it. But don't they have like dramatic meetings? Honestly, yeah. Megan, we have to stop because we can't be using this Lifetime podcast to talk about other programming, okay? We have to focus. And because today's movie is like hot, 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 okay? Riled up. Y'all, we are here to tell you all about the movie The Good Father, the Martin McNeil story. Oh my God, it's a new premiere. It came out last weekend. It is based on the true story of Dr. Martin McNeil, a Utah doctor whose true nature comes to light after the death of his wife. And honey, it comes to light.
Yes.
It now, is wild.
Naomi, I think you watched some of it too. I watched a 2-hour special on the real story, and that was called The Perfect Nanny.
Yes.
And so, and that was unbeknownst to me that like we were going to be doing this film. And so I got so excited and I loved that special. It's obviously like it's strange to say you love something when like people die, right. But I thought the special was really well done. And I thought this movie was excellent.
Well, look, the performances are out of this world. Have some of my favorites, okay? We're talking Tom Everett Scott, who I've loved since That Thing You Do. You know what I'm saying? We're talking Charisma Carpenter, Cordelia Chase herself. And yes, we will be interviewing Charisma at the end of today's recap. And yes, I'm very excited. And I also thought the daughter was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Megan, we're just talking about how much we love everything. We got to get into it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So this movie starts with just a sweet auburn-haired woman in a banquet hall, okay? And she is presenting an award. So I'm immediately thinking of Killer Twin. You know, when someone starts off winning an award, it lets you know that there is a reputation here.
It is such a pleasure to bestow the honor of Sunday School Teacher of the Year Award to my father. I know what a good teacher he is because he taught me everything he knows.
Sunday School Teacher of the Year. The question is, was that competitive? Okay. This is I mean, this is how you establish this is a perfect person. Mm-hmm. Listen to daughter Alexis talk about her wonderful father as she presents the award. Listen to this.
And some of you know him as a decorated veteran who graduated cum laude from both medical and law school. But I'll always know him as Dad. Come on up here and accept this award, Dad.
Dad is a medical and law school graduate. It's like, okay, I'm sorry. There are not enough years here for all of that to have happened. Do you know what I mean? That's
like sometimes you hear politicians, it's not a rap sheet when it's good. Resume, thank you. sometimes you hear politicians' resumes and you're like, that is so impressive for you to be this much of a dork, like a loser. You'd be like, you did all this and you're still just an ugly loser.
So you're talking about the politicians you don't like?
Yeah, I'm talking about like Ted Cruz. You went to school? What school? Where?
Oh my God. Look, Dad is perfect, so it seems, and clearly daughter Alexis loves him. And, you know, to make you really sure that Dad is good, he is played by Tom Everett Scott, as I said, from That Thing You Do, Heavenly. He's like a real...
He looks great.
He's a very like aw shucks everyman. Like that's his vibe. And so he starts off, you know, and like when he wins the award and he gets up there, you know, a lot of white people are clapping, you know, and they're just really happy. Cause I did notice, I was like, everybody in this room is white. That's how you know it's about to be dangerous.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And there was like a little golf joke at some point.
Some of you know him as the unbeatable adversary on the golf course.
You'll lose someday, Martin.
Oh, yes. White people love golf jokes. And then he gets up there and he's like, how about my daughter, Alexis? Now, I watched this movie with my mom, Peggy. We watched it in bed on my computer on a food tray that I've been eating off of. And so I am going to have some Peggy thoughts in here. But Absolutely. My mom and I thought he both said, I bought my daughter, Alexis.
Instead of how about my daughter, Alexis?
Yes, which would be so funny if someone gave like such a nice speech and then you go, I bought them Alexis. I was like, oh, he's like a cool, funny dad. And then I was like, oh, no, he said, how about my daughter, Alexis?
Oh, my God. Then he dedicates the award to his wife, Michelle, played by Charisma Carpenter. And it's like you can tell. I mean, if this ain't a tight lip smile, honey, yeah. I don't know what is. She's just like, cool. Mm-hmm. Like she is not having it. She looks really pissed. And basically, as soon as the award ceremony is over, he's like, I gotta go to work. And mom is like, what? I don't know.
It's Sunday at like 7:30. I know.
I have to swing by the office.
Now?
Yeah, it'll just be a minute, honey, I promise. Hey, guys, thanks so much for the very special day.
It's okay, Mom. I'll help put the girls to bed.
So the whole thing is like Alexis is in med school, but she is home for the summer. And basically, it seems like she is parenting because Alexis basically puts her younger sisters to bed, makes them brush their teeth, reads them a story. And then mom is just in her bedroom stressed out and then tells Alexis, I think your dad is cheating on me because he's either working or at the gym.
You don't seriously think that?
I don't know. His phone's always ringing and he's leaving the room to go answer it.
Well, have you considered that those are his patients calling? He has to keep those calls confidential. Dad loves you.
I just wish I knew for sure.
Now, Megan, you and Peggy are very close.
Mm-hmm.
Has Peggy ever given you tea on your dad?
Why do you think I'm in therapy?
Uh-huh. Okay, so it happens. It happens to y'all. And it's too much. It's too much. It's very stressful to hear.
Now, Peggy never takes the McNeil family book, but it is, you know, now these daughters that are younger, like, they're much younger. They're like 20 years younger than Alexis. And it does make you wonder, and they're adopted. And it makes you be like, did they adopt them because they knew they had this built-in help? Like, because so much of it is falling onto Alexis. And we know from having seen some of some specials about the real family that there were actually two older daughters that were doing all of this. And so that, like, I'm happy in real life that there were two daughters doing this because I'm like, too much is falling on Alexis. She has, like, she's got to study. Why is she even here?
Well, hello, in real, they had eight children, and they mentioned this in the movie where she's like, you have eight kids to take care of. That's too many kids, okay? Yeah. And it's like, the fact that all of this stuff could even go on in a world where there are eight children, it is just like wild to me. Okay.
When someone has three kids, I'm like, are you a billionaire? Is your last name Bezos? How do you do this? You know, like eight children is such a, at that point, you're collecting antique cars, you know, like right. You're in such a different tax bracket that I can't even begin to understand what your life is.
Do you get a tax break for every child? Is that like maybe a reason to have a kid?
No.
Is that like a reason I should have a kid?
No, it's not enough. I mean, because when the research comes out, it's like a kid costs from like soup to nuts, $500K to raise. Yeah,
a million, honey, if you send him to one of those fancy schools.
And I think a tax break's like $5,000 a year.
Oh, well, so, no. I'm going to stick with not having him. Okay, great. Yeah. Glad to know. Now, here's a question, though. Has Peggy ever asked you to access any phone records for other family members? Because that is what Michelle McNeil asks Alexis.
Mm-hmm. No. Peggy knows that I don't have those skills. And I don't even think she would know that you could do that. You know? Like, She'd be like, there's no way. I mean, my dad's not technologically savvy. We could just catch him by following him in, like, right behind him. Literally just be like, okay, I'm going to be in the car driving behind you. And he'll be like, okay, I'll lead you to where I'm going. But that's the same as cannot be said for Martin McNeil, because he's a slippery one.
Ooh, he's slippery, honey. He's an eel, all right? But it also is like him and Alexis seem to be besties, basically.
Yes.
She knows she's going to be a doctor like her dad. And then we actually see her. She's on summer vacation, and she is like at the clinic where her dad works, and she is basically, she's shadowing him.
Well, I think your health is good. What do you think, Alexis?
I think increased cardiovascular exercise, a diet low in fat, high in fiber, and omega-3s.
There's nothing I hate more. When I come to the doctor, and then there's like some student or assistant, you know, somebody's like, I'm not here to be a teaching tool, okay? I'm here to get my shit handled. I'm here to get my things handled, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't need you to be taking these breaks to explain to this student what it all means. Or even worse, if the student tries to give me medical advice, I'm like, I don't know her. Okay?
Oh, wow.
I can't take it. I can't take it.
Well, I love that you gendered the doctor female, because we do need more women in the medical profession, especially at the highest level. I honestly, when I see someone else coming in, I go, good, more audience. You know, because when I'm at the doctor, I am like, I'm throwing.
You are?
It's what I'm doing in the checkout lane of the grocery store times 1,000.
Oh, I get that. Because I definitely do that too in the doctor's office. Like, I'm very, like, because my theory is if I can kind of like build a rapport with them, they're less likely to kill me or at least be more invested in me living, you know?
Yes.
So I definitely like feel you on that rapport thing.
Yes. Okay. So Dr. McNeil and his daughter are attending to this patient, and then Dr. McNeil gets a phone call. He says it's another patient with an emergency, but as Alexis watches him on the call, we can tell that it does not feel like an emergency. He is very smitten and familiar with whoever is on the other line.
Right. And then she starts to investigate his calls. And she starts highlighting, and you see the same number over and over. And it is a woman's number, and it's late at night. And I'm telling you, this Martin McNeil is slippery, honey. In this movie, he has an answer for everything. Listen to this.
She's a tenant. She rents the house in Lehigh.
I thought the Garcias were there.
They left 2 months ago, so I started renting to Jillian Willis and her friends.
Why are you on the phone with each other after midnight?
She's a nursing student. She's doing a residency. Lexi, tell her what those hours are like.
Yeah. See, I told you, Mom.
Okay, well, that explains the phone records, but it doesn't explain the disappearances.
I was hoping I wouldn't have to tell you this.
What's going on?
They found something on my foot.
What is it?
It's cancer. It's melanoma.
I don't think he has cancer.
I know. I didn't think he had cancer. Immediately, I was like, you ain't got no kind of cancer. Because how do you not tell your spouse that you have cancer? And it's like, well, I didn't want to worry you. This don't make no kind of sense about nothing.
Yeah.
After this admission, quote unquote, from the father, the next day we see Michelle and Martin. Also, can we just Michelle and Martin McNeil? Michelle and Martin McNeil. I'm like, oh Lord, I wonder if you just got married for that. Anyway, you see them dancing in the kitchen together, and they're like loverly, you know, as though, okay, mom is feeling loved again. There's some connection.
They're sharing ear pods.
Oh yeah, they're hearing the same song, one in each year. I was like, gross.
What are you, teens on the L?
I know, it's very teens. And then dad's like, gotta go to a doctor's appointment. And it's funny because when he says that, I'm like, do you mean you have an appointment with a patient or you have an appointment with a doctor? You know what I mean? I'm like, which appointment are you going to?
He meant cancer.
Please don't make that face. Don't worry about me. I'm gonna be fine.
Mom is like, I've got some news. And she sounds very upbeat about it.
Yeah.
And so Alexis is like, okay. And I'm thinking like, great, they're going to go on a lover's vacay. You know, like they're going to have another kid. But no, no, no. Mom's like, I'm getting a facelift. Megan, as someone who has done botulinum toxin.
Yeah.
How do you feel about facelifts?
Listen, if that's something like someone wants to do, I say more power to you. But mm-hmm. It comes out very shortly that this was a suggestion of Martin.
Yes.
And that Michelle's like, okay, that sounds like a good idea. I mean, like, this is a woman who's in the throes of trying to keep her marriage together.
Right.
And so you should never get anything done to your physical appearance. I don't even think you should get bangs if you don't want them. Like, that's especially not like a man telling you. That's really like, if anything, I would imagine she would go in for a consultation. I would hope a plastic surgeon would hear that and go, oh no,
I will not do it.
I don't think that's what
happens. Also, it's so crazy because she says too, where she's like, well, you see how good your father looks, and I'm 50. And it's like, yes, but you are being played by Charisma Carpenter. And I just don't understand. I'm like, no. No, Hedy.
Yeah.
Charisma, you're flawless. Because you know Charisma's 51. Flawless. Okay?
Gorgeous.
She is giving us the look. So it's like even harder for me to deal with the fact that she's getting a facelift, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, don't do that. How dare he? How dare he?
People die. I mean,
yeah.
Plastic surgery, it's no joke.
It's really right. No joke. That's I'm like very scared of it for obviously that reason. I think it's also because I'm a pessimist. So in general, if there's ever anything elective, I always just assume the worst case scenario would happen to me, right? Like mm-hmm. if I were to choose it, I'm like, oh no, I'll be dead on the table.
Yeah, for your husband to say you should get a facelift, I honestly feel like that's like, okay, I gotta go. Like I'm taking our 8 kids.
I know, but it's like, but you know, we're talking about how you said, you know, like would a plastic surgeon even do this surgery? Like, you know, if you hear the husband wants it, well, Megan, these doctors have very loose moral codes because after she has the surgery, the doctor's talking to Martin, you know, doctor to doctor, mm-hmm. and lists all the medications that Martin has requested for mm-hmm. her to have after surgery.
Zolpidem, oxycodone, acetaminophen, diazepam, cefalexin, hydrocodone, bitartrate.
You don't know my wife.
And he's like, these are like a lot of drugs that
it's
I normally
so
wouldn't
many. And the doctor does flag it, but then it's like, okay. And you have to remember, like, this is Utah, where like you can have multiple wives. So this is not a place where women necessarily have the agency that you or I have been instilled upon having.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Sadly.
I mean, it is. I just feel like this doctor should have his license revoked. It's like,
yeah.
What are you doing? Because literally Martin's like, well, we should just have them on hand. She's an anxious person. And it's like, you have been gaslighting this woman for 25 years.
Yeah.
I think she's actually fine. And even Alexis, you know, and again, Alexis, you know, she's in med school. She's smart. And so she's like, Dad, are we sure?
She doesn't need to take it all, but we need to have it on hand. She's a very anxious person. She didn't sleep the whole week leading up to the operation. She needs sleep to heal.
That's true.
And then dad just bounces. Like, he can't care. Megan, he cannot care. The evil of this man is mm-hmm. so blatant that I can't even handle it. Okay? It makes no sense. And then mom says she's starting to heal. You know, she's feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
But then she's still not confident in the relationship. So she's had this facelift.
Yeah.
She has gone through this excruciating pain to win this man over. And then She's still not sure. He won't even watch her while she recovers. I mean, this is one of the worst husbands
Men.
In all of Lifetime movies. And the fact that this is based on a real human
I
is
know.
Even harder. It's really
I
hard.
Know. Sometimes the real husbands are scarier than the fictional ones.
I know. It's crazy.
But the time has come. Lexi's like, I have to go back to med school. And you
yeah.
can tell she's very torn because her mom does not seem in a good place. But at this point, she's missed weeks of, of school that I don't even think you can miss an hour. Yeah. So the next day, Lexi is back in. She's in Henderson, which is where my mother-in-law lives. So I was like, hey, go check on Helen.
That's outside of Vegas?
Yeah. It's like a suburb of Vegas.
Okay.
And she gets a call on her pink razor phone. And I was not transported back to college, oh my God. I was like, answer it. It could be a Kappa Sig. I was so, when I saw that pink razor phone, I was like, oh my God, I want one again. So the dad's like, I don't have time to talk to some of your messages. It's mom. I don't have time to blah, 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 blah. And then she like runs out of the school and then she gets a call back.
Lexi, she's gone.
Gone? What do you mean? What do you mean gone?
I'm so sorry.
I don't understand. What? No. No, she can't be gone.
Y'all, we are 15 minutes in. This woman has had doubts, shown phone records, gotten a facelift, and died in 15 minutes.
It's a lot.
Lifetime don't play. So Lexi has to go back home to Utah, of course, and listen to Dad explain what happened when Lexi is like, this don't make no sense.
She was slumped over the tub. Her head was underwater, submerged. I told Jeannie, go next door, get help. I think she fell in trying to put the plug in. She had a gash on her head. I struggled trying to pull her out. Tried giving her CPR, but it was no use. And I didn't call 911 until I got her out of the water. Maybe if I'd made the call before I got her out. Oh, Lexi.
Okay, even as he is telling this, crocodile tears.
Yeah.
Crocodile tears. I was like, you are so fake. And it's so funny because it's like Tom Everett Scott, the actor, is giving us bad acting on purpose, right? Like he's acting as a person doing bad acting. And that's just a layered performance. A layered approach to the work.
Because like we love him. I think you can tell from, I mean, I love That Thing You Do. Probably in my top 10 favorite films of all time. And he's just like so charming and handsome and cool. And in this, you're like, I hate you. I was like sad to be mad at him.
I know.
This explanation, it makes no sense. And what's so horrific about it is that the youngest daughter is who found her. And obviously that was orchestrated by him.
Right.
Because he's bad. And it's just like, what evil are you for your 6-year-old to then have to be a part of this?
I know. It's really just, it's so unhinged. And so it's a tough watch because it gets a little frustrating, right? When you're watching someone and you're like, I know they're evil and you just have to watch this play out, right? And so it's so frustrating. But immediately I am into Alexis because it feels like she doesn't stay too naive. Because, for instance, basically a cop comes and hands them autopsy results and they're like, she died of natural causes.
What about the toxicology report?
It's unlikely to change the findings of the autopsy. This was just a terrible accident.
And I was like, okay, she's not gonna let this stand.
I know. And that's like when I was kind of like, listen, Martin, your little plan for your daughter to be your protege is going to backfire, because if you'd sent her to law school instead, she wouldn't know about all this. But she's in medical school. And so you have someone next to you who hasn't been practicing as long as you, but has the same skill set as you now. And you're about to go toe to toe with her. And that's exactly what happens.
Exactly. So then like later on, Lexi finds Dad and he's like all emotional and he's stressed out. But then also he randomly prescribed ADD medication to one of the young girls.
But it was for him.
But then tells Lexi it was for him when she finds it. And you're kind of like, what? But that's like how you're a good liar, right?
Yeah. Because
if you lie, but in doing so, you kind of make yourself look a little bad.
Yeah.
You think, oh, well, he must be telling the truth, because why would he admit that he filled a false prescription?
Right.
And little do you know, he filling a lot of false things. Okay. Right. That's his like life.
The tip. Yeah. You got to give a little bit. You got to give the tip.
Exactly.
That's not what I meant to. That's actually
well,
not
yeah,
what
you
I
did. You said
say.
Just the tip. You said
no,
it.
I said
I'll hold you to it.
The tip,
you said just
I can't
the tip.
Give
I heard just the tip.
I mean, I get 25% of, you know what I mean? That yes. kind of. Yeah. I'm a big tipper.
Oh my goodness. So basically he's like, "You know what? I think we need a nanny. I'm so emotional about the death." And I was like, "Okay, girl, bye." But while yeah. that's happening, another white woman comes in into our story. We meet Linda Clough, Michelle's sister, and she goes into the police station and is like,
"Can I help you?
My name is Linda Clough. My sister, Michelle McNeil, died recently. I'd like to speak to whoever's handling her case."
She's got files and she's got a short, curly bob. And so you're like, wow, okay, I'm here for Linda.
I know, I'm very into Linda.
So the next time we see everybody is at the funeral. And I know this to be very real to what happens yes. in real life, unfortunately. So the dad is giving a eulogy. He's got a black suit, black shirt, gray tie. Not a good look. It's like the black suit would have been enough. But okay, you went all Johnny Cash on us. And he's really making it about him. Linda is there and she's like, "You're nasty."
Glaring. I know. And she's then, glaring at him.
And then like a femme fatale, like,
yes.
like a sexy
woman. Out of
1940s woman.
Film. Exactly.
Yes. A sexy woman in a knockoff DVF wrap dress comes up with big sunglasses and just showing off her curvy body. And she's like watching all of this from right. afar. Right. And it's like got real what you doing here, bitch energy.
Yeah. And it was like a lot because it's like, okay, you know this is a funeral, not the club. Why are you up in here looking all sexual, okay? And it's like you're leaned against a tree in shadow, but very obvious, a large sunglass. I was like, okay, like whatever you think you're doing, if you think you're being slick, you ain't being slick.
No.
Okay?
No.
And so after the funeral, Linda goes up to Lexi and is like trying to talk to her. Because basically, you know, Linda is like, okay.
There is something about your father that I think that you should know. I hesitated to tell you, but
Linda, I know he has cancer. You know he tells me everything. He just didn't want to worry the girls.
Lexi,
please, let's talk later, okay?
Oh, God. I was very frustrated. I was like, listen, Aunt Linda. I'm sure she got something real good to tell us. But Lexi was like, I can't take it.
No, Lexi's like, I gotta go greet people. I'm sure there's little sandwiches, my sisters. Now, Naomi, I don't have sisters. You don't have sisters.
Yeah.
I was wondering, if we don't have sisters, who will investigate our wrongful death cases?
We have to, now it's up to each other. I'll investigate yours, you'll investigate mine.
Okay.
That's what we're gonna have to do.
We are lifetime sisters.
Exactly. Because it's like, this is, without someone who's like, no,
pushing.
This would never. You need someone to push. Nothing gets done without the push.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God. Again, what have I said on this pod? If not for white women helping other white women, how would murders get solved? Okay? It's crucial.
Not the police.
And, not the pub.
And that's definitely on display later in this film.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Alexis and her dad are leaving the medical center a few days later, and a woman named Gypsy comes up.
Good.
I don't know if you remember me. You treated me for a fractured ankle a few years ago.
Oh, yes. You have an unforgettable name.
An unforgettable name that he forgot. I'm Alexis. I'm his daughter.
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Gypsy.
Gypsy, that's it.
Yes.
And Lexi's like, weren't you at the funeral? And she's like,
no,
what you're talking about.
Also, I need you to know that Gypsy is wearing a leopard print blouse. Okay, she like comes in here in full leopard print with her run-in. And also, can we just listen to how clearly staged this run-in is? Listen to this.
I actually don't live here anymore. I moved back to be a nanny for a family, and then they changed their minds, didn't even give me any notice, so.
A nanny?
Yeah.
Oh, God works in mysterious ways.
What's going on? Is there a joke I'm running on?
Not a joke, maybe a job offer.
Okay, when he goes, a nanny? I almost spit out my cranberry juice. Yes, I was drinking crayon. A nanny? Well, it was like, oh my God, you are so messy.
We don't know the acting caliber in Utah. You know, I'm sure Gypsy did like one play in high school.
Yeah.
Okay, so next thing we know, Gypsy is at the house, rings the doorbell, and
She's just real. First of all, just the way they also shoot her, she like comes out of the cab and the camera like focuses on her rear and she is swishing, honey. She is coming in there to get hers. It is a sexual energy and you have to remember her name is Gypsy.
And you have to remember she's there to be a nanny. And I can't think of a worse name than Gypsy for someone you're hiring to be your nanny. And Gypsy's not even a real name. Her real name's Jillian. And she's like, no, I think I'll go by Gypsy.
It's really nice of her to let you know she's suspect. You know what I mean? She's like, well, you know what? What can really just show people from a really quickly that I should not be engaged with? Anyway, Alexis tries to give Gypsy the rundown on the girls, and Gypsy is just not paying attention at all.
No, she's while like this putting is all on face happening. Cream.
She's getting settled in the bedroom. She is putting away leopard print pajamas. Okay, clearly Gypsy is feral. That is what the movie wants to convey to us. She is animal print.
Okay,
she is a predator. She is terrifying.
I love animal print. I have a dang leopard metallic wall behind me right now. I think leopard is my neutral. So this was tough. This was tough for me, you know.
But you know, I felt like such a clear marker of like her as
of femme fatale.
You know what I mean? Yeah, and I was like, okay, wow. And it's just funny to me how quickly the mask falls off. Basically, Gypsy is just like really meeting her and immediately is like, yeah, I don't care.
I don't care.
Yeah, she's like, I don't care about these kids. And it's like, okay, wow, that was very quick.
Gonna make one easy Mac. Like, it's not even, these aren't babies. You're not gonna have to, like, I think you could pretend to, like, I don't know, look at your phone next to them for a day. It's really all being a nanny is. That's really all it is.
Oh my god. But thank god finally Lexi does call Aunt Linda and it's like, what did you want to talk about?
I think I'm ready to hear this now.
What you wanted to tell me about Dad, it wasn't about his cancer, was it?
No. In fact, I did some digging with friends at the clinic after you told me that, and he doesn't have cancer.
And Lexi's like, I'll be right over. And I was like, okay, yes, perfect. We also just need to talk about how Aunt Linda knows all this information. Because isn't she like an accountant? But she has friends at the hospital. She has friends in legal. She's got friends in high places.
She works in insurance. And she does like the investigations for it. So like if if your house is on fire, then they go in and it's like, did you set the fire?
Right, so you can get insurance money?
Did someone set the fire? Was it electrical? So she's got some detective in her.
And listen to the tea she spills.
He was stealing dead people's identities, opening bank accounts in their names. He served time in federal prison for check fraud.
Okay, what? Dad was stealing dead people's identities, had been in jail already?
Federal.
And this is the moment where I said, okay, where has Aunt Linda been all this time? She should have been over at that house every damn week doing welfare checks, keeping these kids close. She should have been that kind of aunt. Because it's like, Linda, you know this is dangerous. Why aren't you coming through?
Martin wouldn't allow her, though. You know? He would not allow anyone who was against him. Those who are against the queen must die, to steal a quote from 90 Day Fiancé.
You're right. That's why she was probably never around. But I'm like, you got to start reaching out to the kids on AIM or something, sending them G-chat, something to get in there.
And so Lexi is immediately like, okay, he's shady. Thank you. Yeah, I felt this. But she is like, oh my God, you think he killed my mom? Because Linda's the first person to sort of articulate that, like, he should be a suspect. I don't think this went down how it went down.
I can't believe that. You're doing what Michelle did. Justifying his actions, finding a way to continue loving him. I always thought of you as being more like your dad, but seeing the best in people, that's something you have in common with your mother.
But here's the thing, though. She's like, I don't know if he could have done this, but when Lexi goes home and confronts Dad, it is very clear that he could have did this. Listen to this.
And if you insist on continuing this crazy protest, I'm gonna need you to get out of this house.
Are you serious, Dad?
I'm just protecting the girls. I mean, I can't have you acting this way in front of them. They've been through too much already.
So it comes down to her or me?
My house. I'm in charge.
I'll go pack my things then.
Flipped a dang switch.
Mm-hmm.
Flipped a switch. He like goes into his lower register. Mm-hmm. He's kind of talking. He almost sounds like a snake. You know what I mean? Like there's like a hiss, a snarl to his voice. I was like, it's crazy to go from being like, you are my daughter. You know, I have made you in my image to like, I will get you arrested for trespassing. It was just like, oh my God. And while this is all happening, Gypsy just standing at the top of the stairs in head to toe, her leopard print pajamas. And she's got one of the girls on her hip. She's like holding one of the girls.
Well, that is nannying. She is holding a child. So you go, Gypsy, job well done. Okay, so Lexi's been thrown out of the house. So then we see her over the course of weeks, like calling her dad, trying to, because she's worried about her sisters. That's right,
exactly.
If it was just Martin and Gypsy doing whatever.
Right, exactly. You'd be like,
kind
okay,
of strip bless. Jenga they're doing. She'd be like, bye. But she has three young sisters in there. So she's trying to like get back into his good graces to some extent so she can check on the girls.
Right. But wait, and also, I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. However, you did say something that it really tickled my ear. Strip Jenga.
Yeah.
What kind of strip Jenga Martin and Gypsy are playing? This is a new phrase to me. I'm obsessed, Megan. Okay. Can you tell me about strip Jenga?
Yeah. So strip Jenga was a major plot point on one of the seasons of Shaws of Sunset, which is what I would call like a B-side Bravo show.
Okay.
And there's a married gay couple. And when one of the guys was out of town, it was rumored and alleged that his husband was playing strip Jenga with people at their house.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Okay. So this is something that can actually happen. Okay.
I think if you pull a block, I'm just spitballing. Yeah, if you pull a block successfully, you can be like, take off a sock.
I see. Okay. Okay. Now back to the film. Thank you for explaining.
Okay. So Martin says that Lexi can come back home if and only if she accepts Gypsy.
I'm like,
accepts her as what? My Lord and Savior? Fine.
I know. It's also like, Gypsy don't seem to want to be accepted by you. Like, Gypsy don't care. Gypsy don't like you. Yeah, you don't like Gypsy.
So Lexi's like, okay, fine. Gypsy's my mom. Like, whatever. What do you want me to do? She's like, I'll accept Gypsy. And then Lexi gets home and Gypsy is living in Lexi's bedroom.
Welcome back.
This is my room.
Your dad thought I'd be more comfortable in here.
Like, what? You have to accept her. She has taken your space in the home.
Yeah.
What's the problem? And quite frankly, Gypsy, she ain't here to make friends. Listen to this.
So I guess you'll be taking them to school and ballet now that you're back? I'm a full-time nursing student. Didn't your dad tell you that? I don't have a lot of time to drive children, but I'll help around the house when I can. Your father is grieving right now. So if you're going to be staying, you need to support him.
I do what's best for my family.
Okay, it's like at this point, Gypsy, the act is like running very thin. Why don't you just be in Martin's bedroom? Like that's what, why do you need to be in Lexi's bedroom on her twin bed? Like you're clearly
it's like a day bed
with Martin.
I know. I'm like, you have a day bed and somehow this is you winning. But I'm going to tell you this. The reason why I had to play that clip is because for me, this is when it got real. Because this is the first time for me in the history of a Lifetime movie where I am rooting for a woman to murder another woman. All right. I was like, come on, Alexis. Come on, Alexis. Give me a letter opener. You know what I mean? Yeah. I thought she was going to grab something off the side. And that's how huge these stakes were. This is how upset I got. Megan, I think we need to take a break because I'm just like, I am fuming with rage and I need to calm down.
Yeah, you're hoping for violence. We should take a break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, I've calmed down a little bit, but this movie is only going to enrage me further, as though I haven't watched it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, even just in the retelling, I'm livid, Megan. Anyway, later, Lexi overhears her dad crying in his room, and he's like, I'm sad over mom, and he's like, that's very good. You sound like the Count from Sesame Street.
That's and my best impersonation. One, two.
Oh, good God. But as always, crocodile tears from Martin, because basically he's like, you know what would help me feel better? If we got rid of your mother's things, every single thing.
Lexi, will you help me pack it up?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to go sleep on the couch. It's probably going to take you some time.
You want me to do it right now?
I don't think we can live another day like this, do you?
Yeah, go to sleep. I'll do it.
Great. I'll see you later. Like, he leaves her alone and to collect and get rid of her dead mother's effects. Okay? This has been, I mean, she maybe been dead a month. Not even.
Yeah. Also, you're rich, Martin. Just pay someone. Why do you have to, like...
You know, this is the thing I didn't get, because it's like, you rich. But then it's like, okay, he comes the next morning. He's like, let's go to Disneyland with the girls. And he's also like, and we should drop one of the girls in the Ukraine. And I was like, okay, well, it is, because they did adopt their daughters from the Ukraine. Yeah. But the moment he's like, why don't we just drop her off in the Ukraine? I was like, okay, Martin, we see the plan here.
But how pissed would you be if you were like, oh, okay, so my sisters are going to Disneyland and I'm going to Ukraine? Got it. Thank you.
I know.
I'd be living.
God, so
sister Disney and Ukraine.
Sister Olivia got the real rough end of the stick.
She got the boot.
She really. I was like, okay, what did Olivia do to Martin that he's like, go to the Ukraine and keep her passport? And,
yes.
But when they go to Disney, this is what I don't get. So it is Alexis, Martin, and three little girls.
Yeah.
And they are in a single motel room.
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, you're a doctor. You're Sunday school teacher of the year. Y'all couldn't get two adjoining rooms?
That's when Peggy chimed in and she said, why are they in such a bad motel? She called it Fleabag. Why are they in such a Fleabag motel? So we all felt the same. Excellent. Of like, my mom hadn't said anything in a while either. Like, she's like, listen, this man clearly killed his wife. This is where I draw the line. Okay, you can't be having cement walls, bunk beds in a motel. Yeah. We're talking Anaheim. This ain't Hollywood, baby. You can afford a hotel in Anaheim. I'm pissed.
Oh, my God.
We were all pissed. All three of us, universally. Martin, spend the money.
Spend the money.
You know what? You're a cheap piece of shit.
Okay. Trigger warning. Sexual assault. Because Lexi and her dad have to share a bed, which I don't know about that. I don't know about sharing a bed as like an adult daughter with a father. I don't know about that. Okay?
I don't, yeah.
But they share a bed and in his sleep? Question mark? Because you don't know what's real with Martin. You know what I mean? He's pretending to be asleep. He begins to caress Lexi's body, caress her body in a sexual manner. Okay. Mm-hmm. And of course she gets up, freaks out.
You're touching me, Dad.
Keep
me.
Your voice down. They can hear you.
No, I'm not going to. Maybe they should know what might happen.
I didn't
to them.
Know it was you.
Spare me the excuses, Dad.
Look, I'm a very, very sexual person.
Stop. This is so inappropriate.
You know, they end up fighting. They're like fighting in the parking lot outside the motel.
Was my physical life supposed to die with your mother?
I told you not to talk about
it. You don't realize how hard it was without Michelle. Gypsy's been a rock. Without her, I don't know what I might have done.
You are tearing the family apart, Dad. All because of this nanny with benefits. I don't understand.
No, you're tearing this family apart. And now you'll never see them again.
Basically, he retaliates by driving off with the girls.
Yeah.
Okay. Middle of the night, motel in Anaheim. Lexi standing outside in her pajamas and got nothing to a name. And he done drove off.
I mean, it's all bad. It's so weird. It's so creepy. I don't know that it's a major misstep in his master plan.
Yeah.
Because it really makes Lexi be like, okay, now I'm done with you. And now I'm going to get these girls away from you.
Right. Well, you would think that would be it, right? The moment this happens, because basically all she does have is her pink Razor phone, and she calls Aunt Linda and is like,
I don't know what to believe, but I know I need to save my sisters.
Well, we need to prove that he's committed a crime.
He has committed a crime. I'm going to report him for sexual assault.
But when Lexi and Aunt Linda go to Child Protective Services, they're like, we can't really do nothing. And it's like, I'm telling you he assaulted me and I don't think the minors there are safe. And she's like,
Well, she's like, did you file
a police report?
A police report. And she's like, no, because if I file a police report, they're going to investigate it and it's going to tip him off. And then I'm afraid he's going to do something. And so she's really caught in this like cycle of not being able to do anything, because to do anything is going to alert this man who is clearly insane.
Well, and also the problem is, and again, they don't talk too much. They don't really touch on this in the movie as much, but you know, the truth of it is, you know, they do live in Utah. They are practicing Mormons. And Dad has such a high standing in the community.
Yeah.
So that's also why it's like, well, we can't just come at him with anything. The cops don't want to investigate him. They don't want to believe anything's wrong. And so he's able to use all that standing to to get away with murder. And that's what's so frustrating. Because also, too, when she's like, did you file a police report? I'm like, these cops ain't doing nothing. Aunt Linda already tried. And she had a full folder of evidence. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the point of filing the report? So it was so frustrating to watch that scene. To me, it was like almost as frustrating as, you know, watching Dad get away with anything.
And then what comes next is crazy, because Martin calls Lexi and is like,
Lexi, I don't have the strength to pull our family out of this emotional abyss. So I've decided that your sisters deserve a fresh start with the Millers.
It was like, who are the Millers?
The Jennifer Aniston film? What is happening?
I was like, you just gave your kids to a true random. And Lexi, she goes to the Miller's house and is like trying to knock on the door, you know, to be like, what's going on? And they're gone.
Yeah.
But who's there? Who comes? Martin's there. Martin McNeil's waiting for her with a evil glint in his eye. And Lexi's like, no one's talked to the Millers in years. Like, okay, can we just for a second address the fact that the Millers did take in these children?
Yeah.
If I ain't hurt, Maggie, if you and I were to grow apart and then you call me in 15 years and you're like, hey, will you take my kid? I'm just going through a lot right now.
Kids.
Three. I'm like, I would be like, new phone, who this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sorry. I can't just take three children for you because you are someone who is not in my life. I don't know these kids. Also, I'd be like, I don't have three kid money. I can't take care of three kids.
Is this allowed? Are you allowed to adopt children and then just give them to another family? It's re-gifting children. I have never heard of this. It does not seem legal. Like, I'm like, is there paperwork? What is the legality that's taking place?
Right. But basically, Martin, I think, thinks he can get away with anything.
Yes.
And listen to this, like, heinous fight that Martin and Alexis have outside of the Miller's house.
I'm not like you.
You're just like me. You're daddy's little girl.
Maybe so. But you know what I learned from you, Dad? How to fight.
I'll destroy you. I'll get you expelled from medical school.
There's no reason for me to be expelled.
Yeah, so he's threatening her.
Woo!
He's like, push this with me and I'm gonna ruin your life even more than it already is. Which
right,
is
exactly. It's like, you already killed her mother. Mom,
you took her sisters away. Like, med school is a drop in the bucket.
Right. Oh, God. It's like, it made me so sad. Because it's like, all this
She's
stuff
hopeless.
Happens. Hopeless. Yeah, and like, to think, like, your father. Like, when you have a parent turn on you, it just ruins the entire foundation on which you built your entire existence. So it's like,
and this is her biological father.
Yeah.
This is, she is of his genetics of his flesh.
It's very upsetting. Oh,
so as she is leaving the Millers, she does get a call, and the toxicology report, which does take 3 to 6 weeks, has finally come back.
Can I give you a number to fax it to?
I love it, because then she and Aunt Linda, investigator extraordinaire, they go over it. And basically, there's plenty of proof that she was killed. Because it was literally like, she has 7 different drugs in her system. Yep. That ain't drowning in the tub. That is being poisoned. Okay?
Right.
So then they take the info to the police.
And they're like,
but he was also like, wait, what were they like, Megan? Exactly. And also really mean about it. Like, yeah. He was, like, literally, like, pretending to be on the phone. He, like, looked at her. Like, it was, like, so rude that I was like, what did she ever do to you? Like, he's so mean. And so then they just had to leave. And then when Lexi decides to go visit the girls at the Millers, Mrs. Miller, she is a strong Black woman.
I was shocked.
I mean, you know that didn't happen in real life. No. This is the middle of Utah.
Is she the only Black woman in Utah? And he found her? Okay.
Absolutely not. It's like, trust me, there are only about 12 Black people in Utah, but nobody giving them their kids. You know what I mean? So it's like, this was, okay, this is a movie. This is fictional.
The Miller's backyard is nice, so that
it's
was good.
Gorge, yes. But Mrs. Miller is, you know, I was happy because it was very refreshing to have an adult who wasn't crazy and another, like, ally. Because basically she's like,
your dad is threatening to send the girls back to Ukraine, just like Olivia.
What?
They said Olivia never wanted to go see her sister at all. That the whole trip was your father's idea.
So basically, the children he adopted from the Ukraine, he was about to try to send back so him and Gypsy could live. And it's like, I'm sorry, when you adopt, no backsies.
Is this allowed?
No backsies.
Like, what?
It don't make no sense.
I don't understand. Because it's like, Martin, isn't your whole desire to not be caught?
Exactly.
Don't you think if you send back your adopted daughters to a totally different country, that's going to raise some red flags?
I know. And also, I feel like the Ukraine would be like, what are these girls doing here? We sent them away 12 years ago. Anyway. So Lexi, when she hears that, she has had enough. She gets legal papers drawn up that grant her temporary custody of the girls. And she goes into the house and she demands he signs. And he's like with Gypsy. They're like in the bathroom. She's in a little slip and robe combo. He's like putting on a tie to go, I don't know what, pretend he's a doctor and probably start a new relationship. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's the thing about, like, when you get with somebody through cheating, I don't know how you can ever really trust them, because it's like, you know what they do because they did it with you.
Well, and this is an extra, like,
I mean, he killed his wife
and killing her to get her out of the way.
I'm like, Gypsy, nah, we can't date.
Gonna take a bath?
I know. Oh, God. Surprisingly, though, he does sign over the temporary custody. But then that night when the kids are asleep, he, like, knocks on the window and starts screaming and threatening them. And is like,
I know everybody in Pleasant Grove. You've been visiting the police and the state's attorney's office and the media, telling them that I killed your mother.
I'm going to call the police, Dad. I'm calling the police.
If you think that I'm capable of murdering her, then you better stop and consider what else I might be capable of.
And the girls start freaking out naturally.
Poor Janie.
Oh, my God. So then Lexi has to move the girls to a hotel. Now they're in a motel that makes sense to me, because she is a medical student who suddenly has custody of 3 children. So, yes, Fleabag motel. She's in the bathroom trying to do her med school homework, which I said, honey, I think you need to take the semester off. Okay.
That's what I was thinking.
Given everything going on, leave of absence, honey.
Yeah. Yeah. But she's recording something to try and, like, memorize the bones or the connections or whatever. And then
What is medicine, Megan? What is medical school?
Bones, the connections.
The connections. Okay. Yeah. Memorize the bones and the connections.
My tummy goes into my intestines. My intestines go into my colon. Isn't that the song?
I don't know that song, but now.
Well, that's how they teach you in Indiana.
I believe that. Hillbilly songs. I believe that. That checks out.
That and that's why my body was made. Okay, so she is recording herself, and then she gets an idea, like, oh, maybe I should record my psycho dad.
Yeah.
And so she calls him back and is like, sorry, the phone didn't go through. What were you saying? and basically gets him to admit on a recording to sexually assaulting her.
Like that night in the motel when you touched me? That was grief, right?
Yes, exactly.
It just took me a while to realize that because it was so shocking. When you put your hands all over me.
I know what I did. I just want to know if you forgive me now.
Lifetime can be a little punk, you know, a little like anti-establishment, because like women are constantly being failed at every turn in the world of Lifetime. And also in real life, but basically the court will not move forward with the case, even though they have him on recorded media saying he did it.
Ugh.
I mean.
It's just like, and that's sort of when Lexi hits a wall and it's like, I don't know, like, this is what I had him on. And if I can't get him on that, then I don't know what else to do. And in a beautiful turn of events, unbeknownst to her, a cop who is like, I'm busy or whatever.
Yeah.
He goes to visit a retired investigator, Cal, who's at his favorite diner that he calls his
Cal's
office.
Very sweet. He's got Ed Asner vibes, R.I.P. Ed Asner, but he's really had that energy. Yeah, he has that energy.
Yes. And so the cop is like, listen, I don't have time for this.
But but here's the thing, right? It's about women helping, because he was like, I don't have time for this, but they won't leave us alone. So will you look into it, basically, right? Because Linda and Alexis are like, you need to solve this. The cops are eventually like, fine, give it to Cal.
Yeah. And so Cal, like, you know, we see him sort of like look at it like, maybe once I finish this crossword.
But here's the thing, though. Cal literally looks over things in the diner, honey, over a cup of coffee, and has a mountain of evidence that Bruce Martin is evil. It's like, well, if the cops had just read any of the information that had already been put together, this would have been a wrap.
Right. Then after a surprise phone call from Olivia, Alexis and Aunt Linda go to confront Martin and Gypsy at their house. They're trying to get her passport back, and Martin pretends he has no idea where it is. And so then Aunt Linda threatens him. Listen to this.
If you prefer, we can call the adoption agency. I'm sure they'd be very happy to hear about your treatment of Olivia.
And so then Martin is like, okay, fine. Here's the damn passport.
And then Alexis and Aunt Linda meet the detective Cal, love Cal, at the diner. And he begins to drop some bombshells about Martin's past. But unfortunately, he says there's just not enough evidence to convict him. But that's when Aunt Linda comes through with some big news. Take it away, Aunt Linda.
It seems that Martin appeared in court with Olivia and had her name changed. Except he did this while she was in Ukraine.
Why?
Well, he had her name changed to Jillian Martin.
Gypsy. That's why he wanted her passport.
Stealing a child's identity is one way to wipe out your mistress's debts.
They really were made for each other.
Identity fraud. This is concrete. This is something we can have him arrested for.
Finally, something tangible and easy to nail him on, because again, he's a slippery eel. So there's nothing that feels better than when the FBI storms their house and arrests Martin and Gypsy. The only thing I didn't like is that, like, it was, you see Alexis watching, you know, from like across the lawn, but it's all in silence, but you hear Gypsy screaming, and I'm like, I really wish I could hear what she was screaming.
Yeah.
Like her just being like, I didn't do anything, I'm a nanny, you know?
Like, well, and I've seen an interview with real life Gypsy, and she's like, I don't know, I just did what Martin told me to do. And the 2020s woman's like, but you stole a 13-year-old's identity. And she's like, I don't know, my name is Gypsy.
So finally
he's getting his comeuppance.
Yes. And even while being handcuffed, he has time to play mental games with Alexis and try to take her down a peg.
You did this to your own father.
I learned from the best.
I've been charged before, you'll see. I'll be out soon.
Maybe so. But it still gives us time to build our murder case.
Oh, listen to yourself.
trying to destroy your father's life.
I trusted you. I loved you, Dad. I wanted to be just like you.
Exactly. And who are you now?
Well, I'm on my way to becoming a doctor. A real one. You know, someone who doesn't fake their medical degree.
You don't realize you created your worst adversary.
Yes. Yes.
And finally, things are turning because then Cal says there's been a new coroner. Thank somebody, God. Again, doing a job. What you want to bet? The coroner's a woman. I've decided in the movie, yeah, the coroner's a woman.
Yeah, the new coroner. The new coroner.
The new coroner. And she's ruled mom's death is uncertain. So now dad can be charged with murder. Because before, when it was natural causes, obviously it was like, well, there was no murder. But the moment you say uncertain, it's like, okay, well, somebody done did
it. We don't know what happened. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so Cal says they are going to arrest and charge him that day.
Ooh.
Oh!
Ooh.
Cal.
Cal gets a
hash
job.
Browns on Cal.
Oh, I love Cal. I hope he gets free food.
I know. I hope we get to be like, go to the same diner every day, retirees. That seems like, yeah, a fun life.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I love about New York. I feel like I would retire in New York. People say the city is so busy and stuff. But if you are like old and live alone, you can just like walk outside your door and within two blocks do what you need to do, you know? Yeah. And I got to have like a diner on the corner. I got to have my little bodega. Yeah. You know?
That's what Fran's always preaching.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next scene is Lexi testifying in court. And this courtroom is beautiful. I don't know if I've been in my house too long, but I was like, this could be a wedding venue. High ceilings, gorgeous details. I said,
it was
Utah.
Pretty.
Listen, I don't agree with everything, but your court is beautiful.
It was really pretty. I was like, wait, what is this layout? Yeah, beautiful golden hues.
Yes.
I felt like she was very close to her dad. Like, so the witness stand was separate from the judge's seating area, the way we normally see it, you guys. So it's like, okay, maybe that was Lifetime creative license to get everybody in the frame. I don't know. Point is, gorgeous. Whoever scouted locations did the thing. And that's what we love. And Lexi testifies in court. She breaks it all down, y'all. She is telling exactly what she thinks happened, like beat by beat.
I think he found a way to get those pills into her system, probably through her breakfast. We know he made her breakfast that morning. The pills would take some time to take effect, so that allowed him to go to work and make a few phone calls at the clinic. Just enough time to build his alibi. Once he had his alibi, he went home. And he left her in the tub, figuring that the pills would finish the job. And then he went to pick up my little sister, Jamie, from school. She was 6 years old. He wanted his 6-year-old daughter to find her mom unconscious. And then he sent her to the neighbors, but there was just one problem. My mother was not dead yet. She wanted to live. The coroner's report stated that the blood had settled in her back, so she couldn't have been slumped over the side of the tub like he said to police. He killed her. He hadn't called 911 until he drowned her. He knew by then that would have been too late. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Okay, so the testimony is damning.
Yeah.
And then basically the jury is away deliberating. We do get a Nancy Grace cameo.
Yes.
She is the producer of this film. So yeah. She is in and she's like given the tea on the case.
Yeah.
And then the jury is back. They read the verdict.
In the state of Utah versus Martin Joseph McNeil, we, the jury, find the defendant as to count one, murder, guilty.
Guilty of first-degree murder. The worst kind.
The worst kind. And he is, it's so interesting because like as he's being carted away where they're like, Mr. McNeil, and he gets all mad and he goes, Dr. McNeil. And it's like, even when you've been found guilty of murder, you trying to play the I'm a doctor card. It's like, oh, no, sir.
Yes. And they mention it in this movie, but in real life, he stole someone else's transcript to get into medical school.
Yes.
So like he is, and it's not all the way to like Dr. Death level, but he shouldn't have gotten into medical school.
Right.
He didn't have good grade. Like him being a doctor is like the thinnest ice to be standing on.
Exactly. But then also too, when you do find out he falsified those transcripts to get into medical school, then I'm like, is he even a lawyer? Like, it's just right. funny that like for something he made up, he really went hard. He was like, hard. I'm a doctor and a lawyer.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, I think this is excessive. That should have been my first clue. Because it's too much. Why are you both?
Yeah, it's too much. Okay, so we cut to 3 years later. That may be the longest time we've cut.
I know.
Two.
Mm-hmm.
Lexi is bringing fresh flowers to her mother's grave.
And she does reveal that her father, Martin, killed himself in prison. And that is something I guess I should be sad about, but I'm not. Because I'm also going to tell you that in that scene, I know this was not the point. I couldn't help but notice she had an engagement ring and wedding band.
I didn't notice that.
I did. And I was like, okay, so did she get married in the 3 years since?
She did.
Like, I was like, okay, I wanted, because then I was like expecting to see like a husband walk up, you know, or like a toddler come or something. That wasn't the point.
And then it's like, did she graduate medical school? Like, how did that all work out?
Right, right. But you know what? It wasn't really about medical school and a man. It was about justice for her mother, justice for the whole family. And that is how we end our film. Mm. Whew, what a ride.
Yeah.
And a true ride.
A true ride.
True ride. I felt like I was being shaken. I was on a tilt-a-whirl is how I felt. And it was amazing just because I think like he was so openly evil so early. You know what I mean? Like we had almost like an hour of pure evil. And it's a lot to just see someone be evil and like to keep kind of evading. And then finally it comes together.
And if Linda hadn't been, I mean, like the cops even say it. They're like, God, this woman won't. Like she was truly a dog with a bone.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason that he was brought to justice is because Linda, Lexi just would not let this go.
Right. Absolutely. Oh my God. There's so much to discuss right now. And I'm so excited that we have the most special of special guests today, you guys. We have Charisma Carpenter, formerly of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Everything I've Ever Loved. All right? She's also in The Expendables. We don't talk about that enough. And Charisma played Michelle McNeil in this Lifetime movie. Okay, this is the time we've all been waiting for. We are here with one of the stars of The Good Father, okay? We're here with Charisma Carpenter, and this is huge for both of us. Is that correct, Megan?
Yes. Yes. Big for us.
So what are we talking about today?
Hi.
Hi, Charisma.
Hi.
Charisma, you're looking stunning and
beautiful.
Charisma, thank you so much for coming and talking to us about this movie.
My pleasure. I'm so excited to meet you and talk about everything that we do and experience. It's so crazy, this genre of true crime. And now we're trying to transition the true crime into scripted television. So this is like a whole new thing. And Lifetime is just kind of breaking us all in on that.
Absolutely. I mean, and this movie is no exception because this is based on a true crime and a true family. You are playing the matriarch of the family who is
Michelle McNeil,
who's the first known victim in the family that we meet. How do you approach a role when you know that you're portraying a real life person who has family and loved ones that are potentially going to be seeing it?
Well, first of all, it helps to be a mom, to kind of have that sense of being a matriarch and showing up for your children in the right ways or the ways or in a loving way, in a supporting way. And then, but I'm also very unfamiliar with Michelle in the sense that like, I'm not accustomed to just doing that. I'm accustomed to being also the breadwinner. So I was different from Michelle in that sense. But it's not hard to make that transition. And I think the most challenging thing was to, you know, asking my eldest daughter to sneak into my husband's laptop was a bit touchy for me. I was like, that's like not a good thing. And then she kept saying, like, you're smarter than me. And then everything that I knew about Michelle was that she was actually really rather smart and she was quite the catch. So I was it was just a lot of conversations and a lot of meetings with the director to kind of talk about those things. And Annie Bradley, the director, was just so magnificent, and she understood the story and by proxy, the characters. So I really deferred to her and trusted.
I will say, though, Megan and I also talked about that, where we're like, okay, this mom is pushing a little too much on, leaning too much on her daughter. But I do think, in a way, it serves the film in that it shows you, you know, we're really meeting your character towards the tail, you know, at the end. This person, this husband, the husband has done a number on her. And I think you show how someone can really get in your head and make you doubt every facet of yourself. Because,
you know, that is such a great point, Naomi, because I think that is universal in a lot of relationships that you see, spousal abuse or, you know, that sort of thing, where you have these incredible women that become vulnerable to the men in their lives who have just worn them down to not believe in themselves, to not trust their instincts, you know, because of the manipulation and the gaslighting. You know, this is a very good point. And I have a friend has a friend that's actually going through that right now. And you're just going, I don't understand. This person is so intelligent, so bright, and have so much going on for them. Like, she doesn't need this person. How could she, like, not see her worth? You know, it's just frustrating. But common.
And so sad in Michelle's case, because you see this loving sister who really picks up the investigation when the police won't. And they had been, what it seemed like, estranged, or he had been like, you're not going to be a part of her life. And so they isolate you, and those people that help you see this isn't right are no longer outlets for you, because you've had to be cut off from them. He's a con man. Yeah.
A sociopath.
Definitely. I mean, and it's so funny because, you know, Tom Everett Scott is normally plays such a nice guy. And I was he chilled me to the bone.
I concur. And it was really impressive, because he could not be any nicer. He could not be more chill. He could not be, you know, this just speaks to his acting, you know, abilities. Yeah. It's fantastic.
I know that Lifetime movies, you know, they shoot pretty quick, right? You got to do a lot in a short amount of time. But you and Anwell, who plays the oldest daughter,
fantastic.
You seem to have a real lived-in relationship, which sometimes I feel like when you see like a mother-daughter, you're like, okay, these two gals are just getting drinks by the pool. Yeah, exactly. They just met. But you guys really did that. Is that something that is easy for you, to sort of jump into a character, get on set, and just be like, you're my child now, and we're going to do this?
I think so. I think that's my own. That's like I'm a caretaker or nurturer by nature. So I feel that is kind of true. It has been true, but it's also not been true. where I hope what I give is mirrored back in that sense. And I think immediately with her, with Anwen, when we did the table read via Zoom, I was wowed. So I think it wasn't hard for me to just go, oh my gosh, she is an embodies. You can tell that intelligence is there, and those choices, that intelligence is in her choices and her tone and her composure and her delivery. And so I immediately was drawn to her and her abilities. And then, you know, on set, it was interesting because I could trust her to caretake me, because that was the nature of that relationship. Yeah.
Wow.
She was my caretaker.
Right. I also, you know, I did watch Surviving Evil, and I was going to ask you, sort of, you know, having done that show, now telling this story for Lifetime, what is it for you that has you drawn to telling these true crime stories, for lack of a better term? Obviously, Surviving Evil wasn't true crime stories, you know, like obviously survivor stories, but just, you know, as you said, dealing with real people and real things that have happened.
Well, they were crimes that were true, that did happen. It was amazing to be able to do those shows. And why it was important to me and why I like it is it speaks to the strength of spirit. Mm-hmm. And it speaks to the ability as humans to dig deep when we just don't have anymore. Mm. And then you read this story about the Martin McNeil story and you read Michelle's story and she didn't survive. Mm-hmm. But you know, she started to know, but nobody believed her.
Yeah.
And so I think the opportunity here is through telling this story is to look for the signs, mm-hmm. To listen to your gut, to encourage women to listen to their gut, mm-hmm. and to seek help, mm-hmm. and, you know, take the necessary steps. But here again, it wouldn't have mattered for Michelle because unfortunately the dynamic that Martin, you know, he's very charming. He was a lawyer. He was a doctor. He was a faith-based yeah. leader in yeah. his church. He was a community star. Mm-hmm. You know, he was, you know, he would never, you know, like yeah. the cops just took his word for it.
Right.
You have to do due diligence and we mm-hmm. have to listen to people when they say, I don't feel safe or something's wrong. Or, mm-hmm. you know, it's, I think that those are some of the compelling reasons to do this stuff. Ugh. And why it's so rewarding to me and why I do it.
Thank you so Thank much. You. I mean, it's powerful to hear that. Naomi and I talked a lot about, like, you know, there's not judgment we can put on her because we live in California as very, like, women that are taught to speak their mind and do what they want. And it's just, it was a different time. It's a different place. Right. It's a different faith. And the set of circumstances were not our own. Mm-hmm.
You were magnificent. And this movie is so, you know, it is, as you said, there's a lot of important messaging in this. So mm-hmm. I hope if all of you have yes. watched it and if you're going to watch, it will be very good. And Charisma, thank you again for coming and chatting with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. And please keep your eyes on Anwen as she, O'Driscoll, she is going to be a massive star.
Amazing. Female directors. That's important too.
Yep.
Yes, definitely give kudos to Annie Bradley. And I wanted to thank, you know, our producers, Howard Bronstein and, you know, Josh and Nancy Grace. And yeah, this is definitely women centric.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. Oh, Charisma was so lovely.
Yeah. And really had, I think, amazing insights that went beyond what we were even able to see. You know, sometimes Definitely. It is like, yeah, we got to get the people that were a part of the film. And that's just a whole nother level of information. And, you know, she talked about the responsibility and that's yeah. so true. Yeah.
It is her death that starts off not just the movie, but this man's downfall, right? Yes. In real life. And so, but it's also interesting because in terms of acting time, you know, there's not a lot in terms of mm-hmm. the percentage of the movie, and yet it drives the whole thing. You
it's
know what I mean?
Catalyst,
like,
right?
Yeah, and it's
and,
like,
and what he had a full life of crime before he even met this woman and, right. and then dragged her into it.
Right. But she also gets you on board so quickly. I was like, yeah. that is the acting. This is like what mm-hmm. I should have asked her where she learned. I need to be going to the Charisma Carpenter school.
But it just shows how loved she was
yeah.
that it set off his downfall.
Yes, absolutely. Oh. Absolutely. Oh my God, all right. Chills.
Well, I know. This absolutely. Whew. We'll take a breath. Oh, wow. Okay, so next week we have a TV premiere that Ooh. We're covering. So that's always very, very exciting. This film is called Dying to Belong. It's a remake of the classic 1997 film of the same name. And the movie follows journalism major Olivia when she decides to rush Pi Gamma Beta. Okay, exciting. With her new friend Riley, intrigued by the opportunity to go undercover to write a story about hazing practices, Olivia soon discovers there are deadly secrets involved in being part of the sisterhood. Wow, Ooh. We are just taking sororities to task on this.
Absolutely.
And the mother of Riley is played by the iconic Shannon Doherty.
Okay, this is going to be good. This is going to mm-hmm. be good. I can't wait. And also, fun fact, do you know the original was produced by the father of the executive producer of the new one? Okay?
A family
legacy.
Affair.
Family Affair, legacy producing, okay?
And, you are and like, Legacy in the good way, not in the way of you're going to be forced to join a sorority and bad things are going
to
happen.
Uh-huh. Legacy of you get to go to Harvard. Anyway, we're going to talk to both of them and that's going to be great. So you guys, you might want to strap in, mark your cals, because this movie drops this Saturday, October 9th at 8 p.m. All right.
On Lifetime.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. We got to go. Don't say we never gave you anything. I love a Lifetime movie. If you love Lifetime movies as much as we do, tune into Lifetime and LMN to watch all the new and classic movies that we can't get enough of. Check your local listings to find out what's airing on Lifetime and LMN because it just might be the movie we talk about next.
This podcast would not be possible if it was just Naomi and me, for sure.
Absolutely not.
I Love a Lifetime Movie is produced by Julie Magruder,
with Chris Boniello as editor and sound mixer.
Executive produced by Jesse Katz and Ted Butler,
with original music by Blake Maples.
And hosted by Naomi and Megan.
Us. I mean, you should know that by now. If you've gotten to this point, you should know that we're the host, okay?
It feels like we don't even need to say it, but we'll put ourselves in the credits.